This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 10th of February 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Now, may I introduce our readers for this week? Heather Bryant.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. So we start with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recordings that you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That's 01962 861229, and this number can be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And as you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from any item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And of course, for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. And the recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. So we start with our usual headline stories. The first is, people are dying, say striking NHS workers. And that is read by Heather.
South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, workers have resorted to striking as they say patient safety has been jeopardised due to inadequate staffing. Members of the Royal College of Nursing, RCN, within the Southern Ambulance Service, formed a picket line outside the South Central Ambulance Service, NHS Foundation Trust, in Otterbourne, striking on February the 6th and 7th from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. Cars driving past the picket line beat their horns in support of the staff, who are campaigning for better pay and working conditions. Nurse clinician for the 111 service, Anne Carter, who was out protesting on both days, said the group in Sparrow Grove, Otterbourne, was a small but formidable picket. Anne, 60, continued, "We have to protect our profession and improve patient and staff safety. I've been in nursing for 40 years, and this is the first time we've taken strike action. People have had enough, and we need to let them see. All we want is to sit down and negotiate a better way forward." Specialist practitioner for SCAS, Penny Smith, was also there waving her sign, "Honk if you support fair pay for nursing." Penny, 46, said, "We have to strike because they're not listening. It's not just 2023, this has been going on for a very long time. I work on the front line and the amount of queues at hospitals is ridiculous. People are dying because we can't get them in. The students coming through are not going to stay because they burn out too early. My son is starting a nursing degree in September and he will end up in £27,000 of debt, even to have a starting salary, which is even less than that. They say the average nursing salary is £34,000, but that's for band 6 staff, which there are only a couple of at each facility. What about the supporting staff?" February the 6th marked the biggest day of industrial action in the 75-year history of the NHS, with the 2 days of strikes taking place across 73 NHS trusts in England. RCN's General Secretary and Chief Executive Pat Cullen addressed a letter to the Prime Minister over the weekend in the hope of reopening discussions about the 22-23 NHS pay award and ending the strikes. Cullen said, The strike action for England remains with tens of thousands of nurses losing wages to ensure you hear their voice. It must not be in vain.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Teen saves a life on a special night. A night out with friends in Winchester to celebrate A-level results ended in an 18-year-old girl becoming a life-saving heroine, and now she's been bestowed a national honour for her quick-thinking actions. Bonnie Felicity Hodgson had been out celebrating last August, and she was walking past Oram's Harbour. She and a friend heard a shout for help from the park. They answered the call and found a woman who was unconscious on the ground and barely breathing. Closer investigation revealed that she had an item around her neck. Attempts to remove the item from the woman's neck failed, but then another passerby used his keys to rip through it. Once it was off, Bonnie checked the woman and found she had no pulse. Emergency services were called and the ambulance control centre gave Polly and her friends instructions on how to administer cardiac pulmonary resuscitation, CPR. Bonnie has now picked up a life-saving award from the Royal Humane Society after she was nominated by her dad. Bonnie, now 19, said, "I started CPR until she was coughing and she was making noises like she was in pain, but her breathing was not going in and out, so I was told to keep going. Another girl took over and she got her breathing to the point where she was in and out and she was squeezing my hand. Winchester Hospital was 20 minutes away, so it felt like a long time. She told us who she was and that she tried to kill herself. We were just holding her hand and making sure she was still breathing. When Bonnie got home with her friend, the gravity of the situation hit her and she told her parents. She said it was quite an emotional thing. Dad, Simon, was blown away with the way Bonnie handled the dramatic events on what was meant to be a special night, so he put her forward for an award. Now, Bonnie has been awarded a top national life-saving honour, a Royal Humane Society resuscitation certificate. She also won the personal praise of Andrew Chapman, Secretary of the Royal Humane Society. Bonnie was the right person in the right place at the right time. He said she stayed calm, carried out the instructions from the ambulance controller, and as a result, the woman lived. It was certainly a dramatic way to end an evening celebrating exam results, but what an achievement. She saved a life. She was brilliant and richly deserves the award she is to receive. This is another case which emphasises the value of as many people as possible learning how to administer CPR. It can, and as it did here, make the difference between life and death. Bonnie, who learnt her CPR skills through a first aid course and while working as a lifeguard at Alton Sports Centre, said, "I was really proud to get the award. It was nice to get recognised. I didn't do it for any recognition, but it's cool that somebody's noticed." Bonnie's now studying for a degree in commercial music at Bath Spa University. The roots of the Royal Humane Society stretch back more than two centuries. It's the premier national body for honouring bravery and the saving of human life. It was founded in 1774 by two of the day's eminent medical men, William Hawes and Thomas Coggan. Their primary motive was to promote techniques of resuscitation. The Society awards non-healthcare professionals who perform a successful resuscitation. Since it was set up, the Society has considered over 87,000 cases and made over 200,000 awards.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
5% council tax hike. The next Hampshire County Council Cabinet will consider a 4.99% increase in council tax in 2023, of which 2% would be designated specifically for adults' social care. However, according to council papers, the funding remains insufficient to meet the growing pressures in social care over the next year. The increase is in line with the Council's medium-term financial strategy, which was approved in November. The strategy set a maximum council tax increase allowed, assumed without a referendum, following the government policy. The total income from council tax in 2023-24 is expected to be around £840 million and represents 89.4% of the total funding of the County Council's net budget. An increase of 4.99% on Band D for the year beginning April the 1st would be £1,460.25 a year for the County Council's share of council tax. It's an annual increase of £69.45, approximately £1.34 per week. Liberal Democrat Councillor Adrian Collett said that the budget is desperately depressing for Hampshire. The County Council imposes the lion's share of council tax. Borough and district councils, parish councils, the police and the fire service also levy charges through the council tax system. The County Council's budget for 2023-24 will be decided on February the 23rd.
Thank you, Claire. My headline is six deaths in Winchester Jail last year. Despite a decrease from the previous year in prisoner deaths across England and Wales, Winchester Prison saw a rise in its death toll. Six people in custody in the Winchester Prison died in 2022, according to data from the Howard League for Penal Reform, two more than the previous year. This contributes to a total of 30 deaths in prisons across England and Wales, including 74 people who lost their lives through suicide. A Ministry of Justice spokesman was unable to clarify the nature of the deaths at the Category B men's prison in Winchester. HMP Winchester, located in Romsey Road, has been under scrutiny in recent years. In the latest report by the Inspectorate of Prisons, the facility was criticised for staffing, high levels of violence and poor living conditions, with inmates spending up to 23 hours a day locked in cells. While the number of incidents involving force increased from the previous inspection, the November report saw a decline in violence and health self-harm. The report by the Chief Inspector of His Majesty's Prisons, Charlie Taylor, read, "Many of the issues faced by the prison continued to be linked directly to the challenge of staff recruitment and retention." The Howard League for Penal Reform has announced a mental health crisis in prisons across England and Wales due to the number of suicides, self-harm incidents and assaults. Suicides in UK jails fell by 16% compared to the previous year, but cases of self-harm and assaults increased. Well, we now go on to the death notices as usual. Balfour Barry, Vivian Ada Balfour Barry, peacefully at West Acre Nursing Home, aged 98.
Bellamy, Brian Bellamy, 29th of January, aged 84.
Charman, Janet Rose Charman, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 91.
Coram, Liam Matthew Coram, known as Bill, 25th of January at Greensleeves Care Home, St Cross Grange, 25th of January, aged 100.
Goulding, Brian Henry Goulding, known as Ben, peacefully at home, 27th of January, aged 94.
Larish, Colin Collis Larish, after a short illness at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 84.
Osmond, Alison Osmond, at Southampton General Hospital, 7th of January, after a damaging fall, aged 56.
Owen, Dennis Owen, suddenly, on 22nd of December, aged 87.
Pybus, Catherine Pybus, peacefully, 27th of January, aged 74.
Standrin, Rosemary Belinda Standrin, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 14th of January, aged 83.
Walsh, Peter Walsh, peacefully at BNHH, 29th of January, aged 83.
Weller, Daisy Weller, 21st of January, aged 89.
Wheeler, Vivienne Elizabeth Wheeler, peacefully at home, 18th of January, aged 74. Now we move on to Christian comment, read by Claire, please.
Today it's headed Search and Rescue, and is written by Rosemary A. Baker. The news is full of details of the recent earthquake on the Turkish-Syrian border. Sadly, even though all the local emergency services have been called upon, there are people who are dying before they can be rescued. Many are trapped without food and water, and temperatures have been extremely cold. Britain has sent 76 search and rescue specialists with equipment and dogs, as well as an emergency medical team. Many other countries are also sending resources. The problem is getting there with poor access even before the earthquake. This has brought back many memories of when my partner and I worked with two of our working golden retrievers as search and rescue dogs. One of the dogs, Carrag, also worked alongside the fire brigade with their specialist dogs. I was a consultant psychiatrist who had been ordained as a sexta minister in the Methodist Church, and now my dog and I were going to be looking for people who were lost in all sorts of places. Some of these people were depressed and suicidal. Many were lonely and isolated. So being able to at least understand their situation was helpful, and for some to point them to other specialised support services. I also had a role teaching our team and others about mental health. The New Testament has Jesus searching in parables about things, peoples that are lost. There is the lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son, a prodigal son. In the parables, the sheep wanders, the piece of silver is lost, and the prodigal son wastes his inheritance in riotous living. But the shepherd searches the wilderness, the woman sweeps the house, and the forgiving father watches for his son's return, ever ready with an embrace and a warm welcome home. We can't all be part of the actual search and rescue teams that travel to the world's disasters. We can, as well as praying, try and offer donations of money and other practical help, and which will be needed for many years to come. We can, though, offer help and support to the many individuals who are lost in our own neighbourhood, offering friendship and words of encouragement. And Rosemary A. Baker wrote that.
The next letter is written by Steve West, and it's headed School Meals. I want to raise awareness of the campaign for universal free school meals. There is a bill currently going through Parliament which has widespread public support but is in grave danger of being blocked by the governing party. The benefits of widening the criteria by which children would be eligible for a free meal and preferably extending the rights to all are many. They cover improving physical and mental health, supporting educational achievement and eradicating poverty. Children, young people, families and schools deserve our support at this difficult time. The pandemic and the cost of living crisis have both brought this issue into the spotlight. Now is the time to do something about it. That was written by Steve West of Bryan Court, Fordingbridge.
This letter is headed Pharmacy Rethink, and it's from Dr. Joe Brophy. Lloyd's Pharmacy planned to withdraw from in-store pharmacies in Sainsbury's. No doubt another pharmacy chain will take over the service. Perhaps this gives an opportunity to rethink the arrangements. The present open counter situation is most unsatisfactory as it gives no possibility of privacy. When queuing for my prescription, I have overheard conversations which patients would probably have preferred to be confidential. One gentleman inquired about Viagra, and a lady inquired about thrush treatments. The practice of asking patients to confirm their names and addresses is also questionable. The government hoped to divert some of the work of GPs and hospitals to pharmacists. For this to happen, it is essential that facilities should be provided to ensure confidentiality. This applies to high street pharmacies as well as to supermarkets. Dr. Joe Brophy, Charfield Close, Winchester.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Colin Smith draws our attention to the issue of voter ID cards. I wonder if all your readers know that everyone who votes in May will have to have a photo identity card. The new requirement to show photo ID at polling stations, which kicks in on May the 4th, is the biggest change to how we vote in a generation. It's going to come as a surprise to many voters. A poll published on January the 13th found that only 33% were aware. The government's own figures suggest that over 2 million people do not have valid photo ID. This could lead to millions of people being turned away from polling stations. For those who do not have a photo ID, such as a driving licence or passport, you can apply online for a certificate. Otherwise, you can apply for a postal vote, as these do not require a photo ID. Views about the necessity for photo ID may differ, but I think there is a consensus on the importance of elections running smoothly and eligible voters being able to vote. So I urge readers to contact their local council for information about voter ID and their local MP to ask them to contact the Right Honourable Michael Gove MP, Secretary of State for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities, to ask him to fund a mailing to every UK household so that everyone knows. Secondly, to ask Mr. Gove to confirm what target the government has set for the sign-up of those without valid photo ID to a VAC. I believe the government should be aiming to ensure every eligible voter is not barred from voting due to a lack of photo ID. Good, healthy elections depend on this. Colin Smith and Crossroad, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Mr. Golden Common. I was saddened to hear via the Chronicle of the death of Ian Bidgood, January 26. He was a lovely man and known as Mr. Golden Common for his ceaseless promotion of the village. He will be fondly remembered by all. A major achievement of his was that in 1995 he managed to persuade a hesitant parish council to purchase some redundant pony paddocks off Boys Lane on the eastern edge of the village in order to create a park. Together with Neil Smith, Colden Common Youth Football Club, Cricket Club and a huge army of volunteers turned these fields into the wonderful community facility it now is. Ian and his wife Audrey worked tirelessly for the residents of Colden Common and Twyford. He was a truly good man and will be sorely missed. And that was from Cecily Sutton, Bishopstoke Lane, Bramberge.
Thank you, Claire. My next letter is written by Robin Atkins and it's headed Football at Albury Park. Read the issue of Football Club at Albury Park calls for Town Council desperately needed offices and meeting rooms in 2005, as well as new changing rooms for both the football and rugby clubs. The cost of the extension and new facilities was costed at around £600,000. The Town Council did not have the reserves to finance this project, so I and Trevor Ingram initiated discussions with the Football Foundation to obtain a grant for the sports element of the project. The Town Council, NATC, successfully negotiated a £286,000 grant for the four players' changing rooms, two officials' changing rooms and sports room. The remaining finance came from the NATC reserves and public works loan, 25 years at 5%. If FF had not provided the grant, the project would not have gone ahead, or NATC would have had to borrow another £286,000 at 5%, costing £15,000 per annum and a repayment of £12,000 per annum, thus costing the Alsford ratepayer £27,000 per year on the precept. The FF grant was thus instrumental for the whole project. In 2007, there were 250 juniors and 100 adults playing football, and the project enabled them to use the town's facilities at a minimal cost. This occurred as FF insisted on a 25 years licence at nominal fees as part of the FF grant, which was essential to the whole project. FF further agreed that the two changing rooms could be used by the rugby club if not required by the football club. So these two changing rooms were built to accommodate teams of 15 players. Without the project and new changing rooms, NATC would never have been able to acquire land for rugby club in 2012, enabling the rugby club to move from an agricultural field at Byton with no proper changing facilities. Thus, in effect, FF grant was instrumental and the catalyst in providing the town with very good football and rugby facilities, as well as offices for the NATC and meeting rooms. Councillor Divil's ill-thought-out and unlawful resolutions, now withdrawn, to terminate the 25-year licence and evict the football club has now resulted in Hampshire FA informing the legal department of FF to ensure NATC do not unilaterally and unlawfully terminate the 25-year licence. And that letter was written by Robin Atkins of Lindley Gardens, Alsford. Heather, could I have your next letter, please?
This letter, headed Nurses, is from Maureen Youngman. It was with great admiration that I read in the Hampshire Chronicle, February the 2nd, that the nurses in Winchester are not joining the strike. They think more of their patients than themselves. Very commendable. They are caring and very hard-working, especially during the COVID outbreak. They also make patients feel at ease, whatever their problems might be. They truly need the extra money that they're asking for, so they are able to live a reasonable life without the worry of how they'll be able to pay their utility bills, to have enough to feed themselves, and to buy clothing, etc. I feel for them all, and hope one day in the not-too-distant future they will get what they so rightly deserve. Keep it up. You are a credit to our society. Maureen Youngman, Cromwell Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
This letter comes from a BBC digital manager, and it's about BBC HD. I just wanted to flag that the rollout of BBC One HD in the English regions has begun. The first English regions variant, BBC One South, has launched in HD on satellite platforms, Sky and Freesat. This means viewers who get South Today, which covers areas including Berkshire, Dorset, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, Oxford, Surrey, Sussex and Wiltshire, will now get their local news on BBC One HD, rather than the red slate which used to be there. There's a little bit more on this here. hdsatelliteupgrade.co.uk, all one word. And that's from Richard Bell, who apparently is a communications manager with Digital BBC.
Yes. Richard, wonderful. Claire, please.
Trolley buses. I have graphic memories of electric trolley buses, the electricity provided by overhead cables. I can also hear the sound of electric milk floats in the 1950s. Electric buses sound like a good idea, chronicled January 26. Recharging would have to be done at park and ride locations, but how long would it take? Considering technology is advancing, I am wondering whether the wheels turning round cannot recharge the batteries. This would also save money, not using mainline electricity. With regard to closing city car parks, it is a catch-22 scenario. Winchester needs visitors and residents to keep our ever more popular city alive and prosperous. There is a lot of traffic. The Romans did not plan such an infrastructure for their future. There is a balance. Park and ride is popular, but putting off visitors. And residents from Winchester Centre must be considered. We are fortunate in enjoying a rather splendid bus service, but there must be a way to allow vehicles reasonable access. Perhaps when electric vehicles can be recharged, when the wheels turn would be a start. Still busy, but minimal pollution. Winchester is a wonderfully popular city. 500,000 visitors to the Christmas market and the latest Netflix filming of The Crown. Vibrant markets too. Such a potential project should ideally be a multi-party initiative. Then we all move forward together. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Claire, and I think we have one more letter, do we, Heather?
We do. It's headed Funny Typo. It's from Kathy Edwards. I loved the typo. 400,000 plus in 4 days at the 2022 market. Maybe a Harry Potter element there. I hate crowds, so did not attend. Now I am even more thankful I stayed away.
Thank you. That finishes the letters to the editor. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. You could also write to them at the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you could even drop in when you're next in Winchester Town Centre. And that's a particularly good address for us because, as you probably now know, this is where our new studio is, and we are on the top floor of the Hampshire Chronicle offices, and the sun is streaming through the window, and it's a very pleasant space to be in at the moment. Although there's a very long climb of stairs, as some of us know to our cost. Right, now, Richard, please, could you read the editorial comment?
I could. Businesses praised at awards lunch. The prestigious Winchester Business Excellence Awards launched this week. Many of the city's leading businesses gathered at Chesil House for an excellent morning of networking and a lovely breakfast. It was great to see so many businesses at the event. Last year, the ceremony was held at Winchester University, with Marwell Wildlife coming out on top. Marwell has gone above and beyond when it comes to sustainability. At the launch, a video was shown that explained how they use animal waste and turn it into fuel. This year, it's moving to Winchester College with the awards evening on June the 1st. It's important to remember how tough the last few years have been for businesses. The awards this year are a good opportunity for businesses to show the progress they have made since the pandemic, and they have managed to adapt to new ways of working. At the Hampshire Chronicle, we're proud to be involved in the awards once again. We love to share success stories of businesses across the city, large or small. If you have a business you would like to enter, see page 20 of the Hampshire Chronicle this week and our website for more details of the various award categories and how to enter.
Thank you, Richard. Now we have the letter from Westminster, read by Heather, please.
This is from Flick Drummond. The government has announced further measures to help to improve wildlife and air and water quality as we continue to be the greenest administration ever. The Environmental Improvement Plan will create and restore at least 500,000 hectares of new wildlife habitats, starting with 70 new wildlife projects, 25 new or expanded national nature reserves, and 19 further nature recovery projects. This includes creating or restoring 30,000 miles of hedgerows a year by 2037, and 45,000 miles of hedgerows a year by 2050. More than 50% of the UK's hedgerows have been lost since World War II, and reversing this is key to improving carbon capture and biodiversity. Upgrades to 160 wastewater treatment works by 2027 are welcome too, as ministers tackle sewage going into our watercourses. We now know a great deal about storm overflows and pollution, as monitoring of the overflows has increased from 5% in 2016 to 90% now. Councils will also be challenged to improve air quality more quickly and tackle key hotspots. The media headlines concentrated on the pledge to ensure every household in England is to be within 15 minutes of green space or water. This is important, as the mental and physical health benefits are well known, but there is a great deal more in the plan than just that. This government really means business when it comes to net zero, tackling climate change, and protecting wildlife and the environment. I get very frustrated that opposition parties keep peddling mistruths about Conservative MPs voting to allow sewage into rivers and seas, when we are tackling the complex and expensive issues needed to eliminate the problem. What these opposition parties never tell you is that if we stopped storm overflow use tomorrow, then sewage would be going into homes, hospitals, schools, roads and gardens instead. Regular readers will know I sit on two select committees in Parliament. Last week, the Education Select Committee launched its inquiry into childcare. I hope we will come out with some recommendations that are good for parents, providers and the taxpayer. We put large amounts of money into childcare, but it is still a huge cost for parents, mostly because it comes out of net income. There are many ways of solving this. There is no doubt it's stopping people from going back to work because of the expense, and this is a problem when we have a labour shortage. Also, last week, the Public Accounts Committee discussed the restoration and renewal programme of the Palace of Westminster. I would like to see MPs and peers move out so restoration and modernising work can get started as soon as possible. I say this because I had a basement tour recently. There are water pipes next to electricity cables and substations alongside gas pipes. The asbestos problem is huge, along with the mice and rat infestation. We could have a catastrophic issue with our UNESCO World Heritage Site going the same way as Notre Dame or Windsor Castle, not least that people only have 10 minutes to get out of the building. It is going to cost a lot of money, but I think it's important for the country that we sort it quickly. It is, after all, the centre of our democracy and a world-famous tourist attraction.
Thank you, Heather. This week's opinion piece is written by George Hayter, and it's headed, "The Day It All Went Wrong." People think of skiing as glamorous, but it can be miserable. An example is my skiing holiday last month. When my wife and I got to Kitzbühel, high in the Austrian Alps, it was raining. Few things are as depressing as rain in a ski resort. Kitzbühel looked as glamorous as a wet Wednesday in Winnell. Nevertheless, we were up early next morning in the hope that some snow might have survived on higher slopes. I forced my tender feet between the rigid plastic lips of my heavy hired ski boots. Keen skiers choose the smallest boots they can squeeze into so that the fit is super tight, preventing the skis from waggling once they are locked onto boots. Walking in ski boots with two weighty skis on your shoulder is a painful progress. Ski boots are similar to tight-fitting concrete blocks, moulded to prevent ankle movement. Clump, 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 you stamp along at 1 mile an hour. We stamped off to the gondola lift that would carry us up thousands of feet. With no new snow visible on the mountains, I wondered if skiing was possible. Even when the lift took us above the tree line and close to the mountain peaks, there was little white to be seen. The ground was mostly bare brown grass and boulders. Not the ideal scenery for winter sports. However, we could see several pistes, steep strips of snow for skiing. These days, bulldozer-like piste bashers can gather and redistribute snow to keep pistes skiable even in mild weather. Snowmaking machines help. Following COVID, this was our first skiing for 4 years, and we found that we couldn't ski. Had we forgotten how to do it? We could go in straight lines okay, but turning was the problem, and stopping. We kept falling over. Maybe the cause was the snow, because it wasn't really snow, it was ice. Warm sun had made lying snow watery. Refrozen at night, it had turned to solid ice. That had then been smoothed into perilous ice by the hundreds of skis skidding over it. It was turning into our worst skiing holiday. We were frightened. It was the last week of local school holidays, and the sheer ice sheets were crowded with youngsters out of control and oblivious to danger. Some shot past within inches of us. Bent forward and straining every leg muscle to make each turn, my wife and I blundered on, fearing injury. I had been skiing since the 1970s, and now my sudden inability to ski made me worry that this could be my last winter sports holiday. I had got too old. Dejected, we skied back down to the town. The narrow, home-bound piste was steep and slippery, and my exhausted leg muscles refused to respond. When I got to the bottom, I fell flat on my back. I decided to treat myself by lying there for a few seconds while I recovered some strength. Seeing me motionless, a passerby rushed to my aid and pulled me up. His face was full of alarm. He was obviously concerned that someone of my apparent senility had been let out on skis. I had started the holiday believing I was an ace skier, so this man's pitying attitude was deeply demoralising. Next morning, my wife and I had little enthusiasm for skiing, but we headed for the slopes anyway, this time targeting quieter plates on the other side of Kitzbühel. There was fresh snow and covered mostly with ice, and we both found that we could ski after all. Our muscles didn't ache. We were no longer feeble figures, bent over and scared, but zipping along upright and relaxed. By the end of the holiday, we were back to normal, confidently zooming down every piste. So I'm not too old to ski. The holiday was a metaphor. Don't lose heart when life turns to ice and you keep falling over. Now we come to Belgarum, which of course is an alternative look at the news. So Heather, could you read the first Belgarum piece, please?
Yes. This has the title, Just No Escaping Our Perennial Puddle. Bill Garham returns to lots of people's favourite subject, the puddle in the city centre that shows no sign of disappearing. The reason we highlight it is because of the shoddy workmanship that has led to the drain being at a higher level than the surrounding paving bricks, so the water has nowhere to go. That is shoddy workmanship that local taxpayers are having their hard-earned money wasted on. Belgara is depressed at the report that the puddle by the bus stop on St George's Street is now being accessorised with a cigarette butt and orange peel. Perhaps this is actually a postmodern conceptual art project by a Winchester School of Art student. Previous Belgarum stories on the puddle has led to social media fame, with reports on the Facebook page Angry People in the local newspapers. The true hilarity of this Facebook page is not its highlighting of said angry people, but the temper of the people who comment on the page, many of whom combine self-righteousness with dimness.
And the second piece, please, Richard.
Yes, well, speaking of the self-righteous, Winchester near the top of the tree for qualifications. Number crunchers have been analysing the statistics from the 2021 census, which collates personal details from every adult living in the UK, including academic qualification. Winchester has emerged as the second highest place in Hampshire for qualifications, and is the location with the least number of people with no academic qualifications. Only Hart scores higher. The Office for National Statistics reports the least qualified place in the country is Sandwell in the Midlands with 28.9. The top of the table was the City of London with 6.6% of the adult population with no qualifications.
Thank you, Richard. My piece from Belgarum is headed Parker Plays with Fire. And it's a photograph of a car parked in front of a fire station. Is this the daftest piece of car parking in recent times? A BMW parked in front of Drockford Fire Station in Union Lane, obstructing the way for an appliance that might be heading on a life-saving call. There's even a public car park just yards from where the car was parked. The fire station tweeted, looking for a parking spot in the village? Wondering if that big bit of tarmac outside the fire station is a good option? Well, it isn't. On-call stations need that space when the pager goes. Thoughtless parking like this delays us. Please don't do it. Think a little bit. In inverted commas. Comments from the public suggested that the offending vehicle should have been towed away. Should at least receive a penalty notice, perhaps. Sadly, other fire stations across the county have also highlighted the issue of thoughtless drivers. But we now move on to items that you might find of interest in the coming weeks, starting with a piece from Heather.
This article is headed Zoo Favourites Are Back After Killer Flu Outbreak. Marwell has announced that its Humboldt penguins have returned to their enclosure following a bird flu outbreak at the end of last year. As previously reported, it was found that a number of penguins at Marwell Zoo had contracted bird flu, with some dying from the infection. Since then, extensive work has been done to clean and disinfect their enclosure and ensure all legal requirements are met, with all seven penguins having been returned to their homes as a result. This work has only been possible thanks to the excellent planning, quick response and hard work of Marwell's fantastic veterinary and animal teams. The penguins are still under special care and guests won't be able to get as close to the pool or excess Penguin Cove playground, but they can be seen from the main path. Keeping penguins indoors risks health conditions and infection, so returning them to their proper environment is a huge relief to everyone at the zoo. Bird's team leader, Dan Garrett, said, "It's great to see them back in their enclosure where they can swim properly, feed in the water, and have opportunities to seek shelter in their burrows." The zoo has also been open to has been able to reopen its walk-through aviaries so guests can visit their favourite feathered friends again. Marwell is asking guests to help it keep its animals as safe as possible by using foot dips and hand sanitising stations in these areas, as well as adhering to marked walkways. Guests can now visit the flamingos, northern bald ibis, village weavers and swift parrots, as well as other fascinating animals, including giraffes, rhinos, red pandas and Amur tigers. The Energy for Life Tropical House will stay closed a while longer to enable the zoo to complete outstanding maintenance works, but it's hoped that the zoo will be able to reopen it for guests as soon as possible. The zoo is also reverting to its standard winter pricing. Adult admission is £19 and child tickets are £15. All children under the age of 3 can visit for free. For more information and to book your tickets, visit marwell.org.uk.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Well, I have an item here about an experience in the summer that I think is not to be missed by any of us. New outdoor experiences to liven up the summer. A weekend packed with food, drinks, live music and entertainment is coming to Winchester in the summer. The Ibiza Orchestra Experience and the Sausage and Cider Festival are coming to the city for the first time in August, taking over the North Walls Recreation Grounds. Pre-sale tickets for both events sold out within 4 days, but general sale is now live with a 50% discount for people who use the code JAN50 this month. The Ibiza Orchestra Experience will be performing tracks from artists such as Massive Attack, Ian Vandal, Daft Punk, Robert Miles, Energy 52, Tiesto, Fatboy Slim, Prodigy and Candice Dayton on Friday, August the 18th. Confirmed support acts include singer-songwriter Nikki Ambers and MC Ibs, with more to be announced soon. The event is for 18s only. I'm sorry about that, some of you. It will take place outdoors from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Marketing manager Tom Cullen said, "We're excited to bring the Ibiza Orchestra Experience to Winchester for the first time to share a unique take on some of the best music that Ibiza has to offer, as well as incredible support acts and a lively atmosphere." Since 2021, the 26-piece orchestra has performed all over the UK and Europe, with more than 40 events in the UK alone. Meanwhile, following other previous successful festivals across the county, the Sausage and Cider Festival will be coming to North Walls Recreation Ground on Saturday, August the 19th, from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. Organisers have recently announced DJ Panda, singer-songwriter Darren Poyser, and tribute acts Copycat Killers, Scam Fender and Queen's Greatest Hits as live entertainment for the day, with more to be announced soon. In addition to music, the event will see bars offering a range of craft ciders, including rhubarb, cherry bakewell, chocolate and pineapple, as well as food vendors supplying more than 12 sausage flavours. Alongside the more than 25 flavours of cider, there will be other alcoholic beverages, including Prosecco, gin, beer and soft drinks. The large outdoor stage will host a speed sausage eating contest.
Oh, no.
And a 6-round chilli eating competition. Marketing manager Lee Fudge said... Cider and Sausage Fire Festival Outdoors is a feel-good event with great music, a huge variety of cider flavours and great independent food operators. We're excited to be able to host our outside event in Winchester for the first time. For more, go to sausageandciderfest.co.uk/Winchester.
Well, we really get to read some extraordinary stuff sometimes, don't we? This one is a little more mundane. This is headed Open Day at Care Home, where all of us will be going quite soon, I think, at this rate. A new care home in Compton is welcoming visitors ahead of its spring opening. Barchester Healthcare has announced that its newest luxury care home, Shawford Springs, is now open to the public to come and visit. Visitors can meet the team, view the facilities in Otterbourne Road before the first residents move in early spring. General Manager Julie House said, "We are thrilled our stunning new home is ready to welcome visitors. It's a wonderful way for people to come and find out about the exceptional care we provide and meet the friendly team who will be looking after our residents." The 64-bed care home will offer person-centred residential dementia and respite care, as well as luxury amenities like spa bathrooms, ensuite bedrooms with smart TVs, an in-house salon, lounges, freshly baked goods, and a cafe to socialise. Facility will also have a dedicated area called Memory Lane to support people with dementia. As well as residential and dementia care, the service will also be equipped for respite care and short stays. Shawford Springs is hosting an open day on Saturday, March the 4th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Alternatively, visitors can book an appointment. For more, go to barchester.com, / home, / Shawford Springs Care Home, or you can call them on 01962 383 123. Barchester Healthcare currently operates more than 200 care homes across the UK. Do we have another one, please?
Yes, this heading is Flipping Great Fun, City All Set for Pancake Race. Winchester Rotary's annual pancake race returns later this month. This year, Shrove Tuesday falls on February the 21st, and the pancake races will again be held at Winchester Cathedral's Outer Close. As in previous years, teams of four from local businesses, charities, schools and colleges are invited to enter. Trophies will be awarded for the fastest team and the team with the best fancy dress. Full details of how to enter can be found by following the link on the homepage of the Winchester Rotary website, winchester-rotary.org. The charities benefiting this year will be Hope Street and Trinity Winchester Women's Services. Pancakes and entertainment will start in the city centre at 12:30 p.m. on Shrove Tuesday, and the racing is scheduled to start at 1 p.m.
Thank you. Richard, please.
Tenors in town. The Theatre Royal Winchester will be welcoming the number one selling classical vocal trio, Tenors Unlimited, to Winchester later this month. Called the Rat Pack of Opera, this group is welcoming new member Patrick Smith to the group in concert, celebrating 20 years at the theatre on Wednesday, February the 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Patrick is replacing Scott Kiscon, who has emigrated to Australia with his family. Patrick said, "What a great opportunity to sing with the Tenors Unlimited in their 20th anniversary show. I'm super excited. I feel a bit nervous stepping into Scott's shoes, but I'm looking forward to singing with the guys and having lots of fun on stage." Tenors Unlimited has performed all around the world at top venues such as the Royal Albert Hall, the Royal Festival Hall and Wembley Stadium, alongside such notables as Sting, Lionel Richie, Catherine Jenkins, Beyoncé, Hayley Westenra, Simply Red and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, to name a few. 20 years, Tenors Unlimited has been entertaining audiences worldwide, using talents honed in their solo careers in opera and theatre. Regarded as the original classical crossover man band, In Concert Celebrating 20 Years will take you on a wonderful musical journey through some of the best-loved songs made famous by other icons of song such as Pavarotti, Lanza, Sting and Freddie Mercury. Visit theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk for tickets.
Richard Clare, please.
Falklands commander to share insights on Ukraine. A former British Army officer who became commandant of the Royal Military Academy will be giving a speech at a fundraising event in Stockbridge. Major General Tim Toyne Sewell, Commander RMA Sandhurst, 1991-94, will be speaking about the importance of leadership in the context of the Ukrainian situation at Stockbridge Town Hall on Friday, February the 17th, as part of a briefing evening run by the Stockbridge Ukraine Group. Tim's military career, 1959-94, included being Chief of Staff Falkland Islands, 1983, and commanding 19th Infantry Brigade to training, amalgamating and creating a new army from the opposing Zimbabwean factions at the end of the Civil War, 1980. Finally, he was commandant of RMA Sandhurst, with its worldwide reputation for young officer leadership training. As commandant, he paid interesting visits to the Russian Military Academy and to West Point. He distinguished post-military career, made best use of his expertise in this field. He will talk about leadership in the Ukrainian conflict and take questions. Second speaker, Charlie Hutchison, has spent 6 years in eastern Ukraine, deployed as a military observer to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Charlie will fascinate with his direct experiences in Ukraine, both in the separatist areas and the government-held territory, Mariupol at that time, together with his impressions from a recent return visit. The evening will finish with inspirational Chilbolton mum, Harriet Asher, telling us why, desperate to help, she travelled to Poland, but found herself crossing the border into Ukraine. There, she quickly identified a need for safe travel for refugees. She set up a GoFundMe page to pay for accommodation, coaches, and air travel. Harriet will update us on her ongoing humanitarian efforts, now sourcing items required on the ground in Ukraine. These have ranged from generators and medical supplies to warm clothing for orphans. This is a fundraising event. Tickets are £10 and can be purchased from Ukraine. What is needed now? Tickets Friday the 17th of February 2023 at 1800. Eventbrite. Doors and bar open at 6 p.m. First speaker at 6:30 p.m. All proceeds from ticket sales and fundraising will be used to fund generators, medical supplies, and other items required on the ground in Ukraine.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is actually to do with a tour of Winchester Cathedral, and it's a touch tour for blind and partially sighted visitors. The cathedral now provides pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour will provide you with a history of the building and the stories of some of those who worked here or were buried in the cathedral. There will be opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of architecture of the cathedral. Also, you will be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The recommended maximum size of each tour is 3 visually impaired visitors. Ideally, you should have a companion who will be granted free entry, but one can be provided on request. These tours will take a little over an hour, and afterwards you'll be able to visit the Kings and Scribes exhibition, where there will also be many exhibits that you can touch. The next two tours will be on Thursday the 2nd of March at 2:30 p.m. and Monday the 17th of April at 2:30 p.m. Further fixed dates will be offered shortly, but if any group of up to three visually impaired people would like a tour on another date, please call the number below. So there are two ways to book. You can ring the visitor services team on 01962 857275. That is 01962 857275. Or if you're able to use the internet, you can email visits@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. And it says here, they look forward to meeting you. Then a couple of things in the diary that you might be interested in. Friday the 17th of February, there's a lecture and curry lunch. The Savage Wars of Peace, starting at 10:30 a.m. In the Gurkha Museum. And it's a lecture delivered by Lieutenant Colonel Mike Tickner on the seismic shift in the Far East after Japan's sudden surrender in 1945. And that is followed by an authentic Nepalese curry buffet. Sunday the 19th, there's a tabletop sale you might be interested in Week Community Centre in Taplings Road, Winchester. Thursday the 23rd, at the Theatre Royal Winchester, there is Treasure Island, which starts at 7 p.m. Now, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 7:30 and set again at around 7:10 p.m. So, Heather, can we have your first item of general news, please?
Which is headed Special Garden Lights Display. For 3 weeks, a public garden will be transformed into a land of fantasy and lights as the council pours funding into the season of light. Following the success of the 2022 Lights in the City event, Winchester City Council has announced that Abbey Gardens will become an enchanted light garden from February the 11th to March the 5th, with displays of light-up tunnels, fairy tale creatures and flowery delights. The three-week display forms part of the Season of Light, culminating in Winchester Cathedral's Lux Muralis event, The Elements. On the weekend of February the 18th and 19th, free interactive entertainment will also take place as walkabout artists perform through the late afternoon and early evenings. Access to see the lights is free and recommended as night falls for the best effect. However, daytime visitors will still be able to witness the displays, which aim to enhance the natural beauty of the surroundings.
Thank you, Richard.
Bridge traffic faces 9-month closure. Plans to replace a 100-year-old bridge in Winchester, costing £1.4 million, have been announced by Hampshire County Council. Garnier Road will be closed to vehicles for 9 months, from March the 1st until the end of November, as work begins to replace the road over Turnbridge by St Catherine's Hill. The council is implementing the Significant and Complex Engineering Project, which is expected to take 9 months, due to the bridge's deterioration and to make the route safe. New bridge elements will meet modern weight-bearing standards and have been designed to complement the picturesque surroundings and nearby red brick heritage features. Improvements will also be made to nearby pavements as part of the Council's Operation Resilience programme while the road closure is in place. Signed diversions for motorists will be up, directing vehicles along St Cross and Bar End Road instead. Garnier Road will be open for access only, allowing Garnier Road car park and St Catherine's and Barfield park and ride car parks to remain usable. Pedestrians and cyclists will still be able to use one side of the bridge for most of the 9-month project. Executive Lead Member for Universal Services, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said, At its century, Turnbridge is showing visible signs of its age and deterioration, and therefore the road and top section of the bridge now have to be replaced with a structure that meets modern standards. This essential work will ensure that the route over the Itchen Navigation remains safe and in a serviceable condition for the next 100 years. Unfortunately, this will inevitably mean disruption while work is underway. The handlebar cafe and a pump house will still be accessible by vehicles and on foot or bike. Yes, you can't get there on your bike. Other motorists will need to use the signed diversion route for the duration of the engineering work. I apologise for this unavoidable inconvenience, and I'd like to thank everyone in advance for their understanding and patience while this project is completed. For updates on the upcoming closures, go to hants.gov.uk/transport/transport-schemes/Turnbridge-Garnier Road #step1. good luck with that. And to view the diversion route, go to documents. No, I won't do that.
No, it's enough already. Claire, what's your piece, please?
This is locals isolated by bus changes. A resident from Oliver's Battery has been battling for a better transport service after buses in the area were reduced to 2 times a week. Lloyd Brammer, who's 62, has been calling for improvements since Creta Coaches took over the number 63 from Stagecoach in November. The bus, which runs from Winchester to Oslebury, now only operates on Mondays and Thursdays, visiting the Oliver's Battery stop in Sunnydown Road 3 times a day. Mr. Brammer says the given timetable is the service at best and greatly outweighs residents' need. He said, "It's terrible. People without transport now have great difficulty travelling, and it's negatively impacting their way of life. I feel sorry for the residents of all different ages, from young families to elderly people who can't walk a mile to the number 5 bus stop instead. All other areas have good bus services, but Oliver's Battery has been neglected. All we need is for Stagecoach to take a 10-minute detour to pick up residents here too." Mr. Brammer has been in contact with Hampshire County Council to try and improve the service. In response, Councillor Edward Heron, who was previously in charge of council transport, suggested residents use Dial-a-Ride, but the door-to-door bookable service means people who usually get free bus travel have to pay £5 to £7 per trip. Mr. Brammer, who qualifies for free bus travel due to being disabled since suffering a stroke 6 years ago, said, "Dial-a-Ride is not a solution. I have been totally ignored since early November 2022. So now they've left us all in Oliver's Battery with nowhere to turn to, feeling completely let down by Hampshire County Council, isolated, secluded and abandoned." Councillor Heron said, "Mr. Brammer has received considerable email correspondence from myself and the department in respect of matters he has raised." A council spokesperson said, "Bus services in Hampshire are operated independently and commercially by a range of bus operators. For a small portion of services, less than 10%, with insufficient fare-paying passengers, numbers to cover the operating costs, the authority pays the operator a subsidy to maintain a service. The 63 service currently operated by Cresta Coaches, who took over the service in a bid to reduce Stagecoach's operating pressures, is one such service. Unfortunately, in the face of inflationary pressures and reduced government funding, it is not possible for the council to extend that support for the operator to increase the frequency of services.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed Newly Refurbished Cafe is Just the Ticket. A ticket office at a railway station in Hampshire that lay neglected for decades has found a new lease of life with the renovation and overhaul. Visitors to Shawford Railway Station will now be able to while away their waiting time at a community cafe called Platform One. The £350,000 project has been designed by Romsey-based projects and coordinated by Hampshire Community Rail Partnership in collaboration with contractor Avon Construction. The building required extensive renovation after it lay unused for 40 years. A special event was held last week to unveil the work. Gary Wilburn, Managing Director of EP Projects, said, "The public support and positive response to the completion of this regenerative community-focused project has been overwhelming, and we wish Marco Bertischini and his team every success with Platform One. Community groups are welcome to use the facilities and take advantage of the space and the community kitchen. As the spring weather arrives, use of the outdoor seating area is expected to be popular with locals, cyclists and walkers." Next piece, please, Heather.
City Centre Stationery Shop to close. Paper Chase in Winchester is to close after the stationery company went into administration. Signs have popped up in the windows to the St George's Street branch, with all stock currently 20% off. The company recently went into administration yesterday and announced that 106 stores would be closing. Tesco announced a deal to buy the brand and intellectual property. The administrator said, "On January the 31st, Mark Fry, Kirsty Proven and Gary Shankland of Begbie's Trainer were appointed as joint administrators of Aspen Phoenix New Co. Limited, which trades as Paper Chase. Unfortunately, despite a comprehensive sales process, no viable offers were received for the company or its business and assets on an ongoing concern business. However, there has been significant interest in the Paper Chase brand and attendant intellectual property. The joint administrators will continue trading the company's operations in the short term, with all stores remaining open and trading as normal. Jan Marchant, Managing Director of Home and Clothing at Tesco, said, "Paper Chase is a well-loved brand by so many people, and we're proud to bring it to Tesco stores across the UK. We look forward to sharing more with our customers in due course."
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
Opposition is mounting to colleges' extension plans. Neighbours are starting to object to Winchester College proposal for a pair of boarding houses and development on parkland. The boarding school is admitting girls and wants to construct two new houses on tennis courts off St Cross Road. The plan also includes converting Antrim House, the school medical centre, into staff accommodation, removal of an all-weather playing pitch and the laying of a new pitch with artificial grass at Kingsgate Park. A historical brick and flint wall on St Cross Road would have two long holes knocked through to allow vehicle access. Now, more than a month after the plans were submitted, neighbours are beginning to object, and 11 have been received by the City Council. One objector said the college was taking liberties with the scheme. Others have pointed out that the plan for access off St Cross Road comes after other similar proposals from houses on the road have been rejected. Dr Rebecca Farmer of Norman Road told the council, "The college has a poor record of engaging with residents of neighbouring properties. Residents were not notified that an application had been made." Elizabeth Brackenberg Dice of St Cross Road wrote, "This is a considerable development that will have detrimental effect on its neighbours both during construction and long term. We've had 3 years of noise and light pollution during the construction of the college's sports centre." Jan Davis of Edgar Road said, "This proposed development is in a conservation area which, if built, will destroy the area's special characteristics." Lucy Lindsay of St. Crest Road said, "The size and nature of the proposed development makes a mockery of the purpose of a conservation area, and it will play havoc with the traffic on St. Cross Road." Patrick Morton of Edgar Road asked, "How can the building of two three-storey boarding houses and a very large all-weather sports pitch possibly be said to preserve or enhance the area?" The boarding houses are needed for the private school to accept girl boarders from 2024. Day girls were admitted in September. The two houses would accommodate 60 boarders each and 20 day pupils. The college said the development is vital to its long-term future. Without investment in new buildings and other facilities, the college's prestige and its ability to maintain its existing land and buildings to the current high standards is vulnerable.
Thank you, Richard. Clare.
Students visit seat of power. Mearne Valley MP Flick Drummond has welcomed Swarnmore College students on a visit to the Houses of Parliament. The contingent of 34 students and 4 teachers were met by Mrs. Drummond, who took time out to show them around the chamber of the House of Commons in Westminster. The group then went into a committee room for a question and answer session. Topics up for discussion on the day included the NHS strikes and the Scottish Gender Recognition Reform Act. Mrs. Drummond also took them into the public gallery and helped them follow the debate. The Conservative MP said it was a pleasure to have so many engaged and interested students up to Parliament to see where and how our laws are made. "I really enjoyed the Q&A session with questions and views that were well thought out and considered. The students are a credit to the school and the wider Mearne Valley." And the MP added, "I believe encouraging and helping our future generations understand how Parliament works is incredibly important if we are to strengthen our democracy."
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed "Ancient Dig to Hold Up City Centre Plan." 4 trenches costing £400,000 will need to be dug to allow archaeological work to be carried out before a regeneration project for the centre of Winchester can start. Winchester City Council's Regeneration Committee gave a timeline and approved funding for archaeological work for the Central Winchester Regeneration CWR plan at its meeting on February the 7th. CWR was formerly known as Silver Hill and was derailed in 2015 for various reasons, including a series of rows and a High Court challenge. Now the council has resurrected the scheme for a revamp of the land between Friarsgate and the Broadway. The council said the development part of the scheme will be announced on March the 17th. Former City Councillor Ian Tate was at the meeting and spoke as a member of the public. He called for the council to set out specific times to avoid further delays. He said, "The thrust of what I want to say is about the lack of progress since Silver Hill was derailed in 2015. There are currently no specific plans of what to do with the Friarsgate surgery. Could it deliver a housing scheme? There has been excellent work by the estates team to improve King's Walk. I welcome the clarity from the leader of the council. It's a real challenge. We need a timeline that we can buy into." Verein Lyons, head of programme for CWR, said they have asked the planning authority to delay the Friars surgery planning application to incorporate archaeological works on the site. But she added, "We will revisit it." The committee approved £350,000 to pay in part for the 4 trenches to be dug on the eastern part of the site around the bus station. The rest of the money has previously been approved. Mrs. Lyons said the trenching work will help inform the proposals. There's very little known about the eastern side of the site. The purpose of the trenching is to investigate. Data will not be automatically lead to a big dig. If we do find something, there will be further discussions. The committee also discussed future consultations for CWR. The leader of the council, Councillor Martin Todd, said there's no question as to the importance of this openness. He said that some meetings would happen in private, but said it was a common practice for project management. The committee also said that a business case for the area around the railway station called Station Approach will go to Cabinet in June with a master plan published in the spring of next year. Heather, please.
This item is about 20 mile. The heading is 20 mile an hour speed limits may be the new norm. Following a report where Hampshire residents and group campaigners made clear that 20 miles an hour would make roads safer, the Department for Transport, DFT, has started considering whether 20 miles an hour could become the standard speed limit in built-up areas. According to the planning document, the default should be to work to a design speed limit of 20 miles an hour in urban environment. For residential streets, a maximum design speed of 20 miles an hour should normally be an objective, with significantly lower speeds usually desirable. The document, which is still not finalised or presented to ministers, is described as the DFT's key piece of guidance on designing streets that put place above movement. Executive Lead Member for Universal Services, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said, "This suggestion from the government is helpful, but we also need to take it into account because if there is a new national policy to bring forward, we need to make sure that Hampshire is doing the same thing. We need to see what they are talking about. I absolutely agree that every single time that we are looking at a new development within which there are roads, we should be saying that these roads must be 20 miles an hour, because that changes the nature of the community from day one, and that's a great thing because you are beginning to get people used to it." At the last Universal Services Transport and Environment Select Committee, members accepted the report and recommendations of the 20 mile an hour task and finish group, and they will be taken into account in the development of any new policy. Councillor Adams-King said, "There is in some places the assumption that if you reduce the speed limits, it stops people from speeding. The evidence doesn't point to that always being the case. Changing the speed limit, bringing an immediate 20 mile an hour limit everywhere, would not necessarily be the solution to speed limit problems unless properly enforced. We need to take our time to work on how best to alter our policies to allow 20 miles an hour. Officers will make a recommendation to the Cabinet in the summer. We have to try and put balance. We need to take our time to do it right, and I hope we can bring forward a proposal in June for the committee to look to confirm that they are happy. And if that is the case, we will make the decision in July as to what the new policy is and how to do things."
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
Cathedral honour for BBC veteran. Winchester Cathedral's highest honour, the Companionship of St Swithin, has been conferred on Bruce Parker, the chairman of the Cathedral Friends. The ceremony took place during the Cathedral's Evensong service and was attended by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, and Mrs Atkinson. The main presenter of BBC South's regional programmes for nearly four decades, and the first presenter of the Antiques Roadshow, Mr. Parker said that becoming a Companion of St Swithin Order was one of the highlights of his life. Only two other people have received the award: Father John Cutter, a leading cathedral benefactor, and Lady Mary Fagan, the former Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, who was the driving force behind a number of substantial funding appeals in the past. For more than 50 years, Mr. Parker has been a member of the Cathedral Friends and its chairman for the past 10 years.
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Special delivery doing well at zoo. Well, why not?
Yes.
Marwell Zoo is celebrating the birth of a floppy-eared, critically endangered bongo. The mountain bongo was born at the Golden Common Zoo recently and is said to be doing well. The sex of the new calf is currently unknown, with Mum Canella being left to bond with her baby. The new mother is doing a great job, according to staff. Animal keeper Rihanna Worsell said, "Both Mum Canella and her calf are doing really well. The calf has been seen up and down exploring its enclosure with Canella, following closely behind him or her. Canella has been very attentive towards her calf. The gender is currently unknown, as we will leave them together to bond without any disturbance from us. Male and female bongos are the same chestnut red colour, but as they get older, males get darker and females become paler. In the wild, mountain bongos are found in four district areas of Kenya, where they live in forests and highlands. It is believed that there are now less than 100 of the animals left in the wild, with populations continuing to decline. Conservation charity Marwell Wildlife therefore believes importance of captive mountain bongos breeding programs has never been greater. Mountain bongos prefer areas with tall shrubs, such as forest edges, and areas where the forest has been disturbed, causing new growth. Calves are often left hidden in vegetation after birth to conceal them from predators. Mothers will return for them to suckle. Leopards are the main predators of bongos, and when under threat, they will run into the forest with their horns held against the back of their necks so they don't get snagged on the undergrowth. The species face threats such as hunting with dogs and loss of habitat, as well as the risk of diseases from domestic cattle. Mountain bongos are predominantly nocturnal, resting from about 10:30 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. The species has a life expectancy of about 21 years. For more, go to marwell.org.uk.
Thank you, Claire. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week, but before we go, another reminder that if you do have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible? And also put the address label inside the wallet as well. So thanks to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course many thanks to our readers, Heather.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Bye.
Claire.
Bye.
And from me, Peter, goodbye. Until next time.